Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, January 11th. Grand jury indicts Wilson. Serial shooter indicted on murder count, four assault counts. The story was written by Royal McGregor. A 37-year-old Odessa man was indicted by an Ector County grand jury in connection to a string of shootings that left one man dead and another hospitalized, and many Odessans afraid of another random gunman. Troy Lee Wilson was indicted on one count of murder, a first-degree felony, and four counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony, when the grand jury met on December 17, 2019. The arraignment for Wilson has been scheduled for 10 a.m. January 22nd in Judge Stacy Trotter's 358th District Courtroom, court records show. Michael McLeish is representing Wilson, while Ector County District Attorney Bobby Bland is prosecuting the case. Wilson has five bonds totaling $450,000 and was still in custody at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center as of Friday morning. Quote, "Hopefully this can be the beginning of closure," Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said over the phone. Continuing the quote, "For the individual that was killed, the family isn't going to get rid of their emotions from losing a loved one, but they can get some closure knowing he's going to go to trial. We think we have a good case on him. I'm happy he's in jail, and he's not going to cause harm to anyone else." End quote. During a phone call with Bland, he said three of the four indictments of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon came after Wilson reportedly shot at people, while the other aggravated assault with a deadly weapon left a man hospitalized. Griffiths held a press conference about a possible serial shooter on September 27, 2019, after four shootings left one person dead, another hospitalized, and several others shot at. Law enforcement agencies were searching for a white pickup. A Midland County Sheriff's Office deputy was notified at 12:09 p.m. September 27th by an Odessa Police Department undercover unit that it was following a white 2015 Ford F-150 that matched the description of a possible murder suspect that was linked to several shootings in Ector County, a previous Odessa American article detailed. The MCSO deputy reportedly saw the pickup with an obscured rear license plate and a toolbox at 12:19 p.m. at mile marker 128 on Interstate 20. A traffic stop was attempted, but the pickup failed to stop. The MCSO deputy activated his emergency siren on his marked patrol car and saw the driver through the back window of the pickup appeared to look into both the driver and the passenger's side mirrors and reach with his right arm inside the vehicle for an unknown object. The pickup continued east at 55 miles per hour for 4 miles before it exited at mile marker 131, a previous Odessa American article detailed. The vehicle stopped near Interstate Highway South Service Road, just west of Texas Loop 250. During the traffic stop, there were reportedly two firearms with similar ammunition from the fatal shooting scene. Wilson told a Texas Ranger during a video-recorded interview on September 27th that he shot 31-year-old Juan Leonardo Rosales twice in the head on September 26th after Rosales had pulled off the road with car trouble on Business Interstate 20 between Farm to Market Road 1936 and the Interstate 20 overpass. Jesus Alvarado, age 52, was shot at 4:22 p.m. September 24th and sought help at the Pilot truck stop located near the intersection of Meteor Crater Road and Interstate 20. Alvarado was reportedly shot in the abdomen while he was waiting on the side of the road for a crew truck to arrive. That man was later treated and released from Medical Center Hospital. The fourth shooting was fatal on Thursday night. The first shooting happened at 12:45 a.m. September 24th at 8th Street and Grant Avenue, while the next happened later that morning at 7:36 a.m. at Farm to Market Road 866 and Interstate 20, a previous Odessa American article detailed. These shootings followed the August 31st mass shooting in Odessa that left 7 dead and 25 injured. That gunman, Seth Ator, was killed by police near Synergy Theater in a daytime shootout. Ator's autopsy reveals no drugs or alcohol. Gunman was shot multiple times all over body. This was written by John Tufts of the San Angelo Standard-Times. The autopsy performed on the Midland-Odessa shooter revealed he was not under the influence of drugs or alcohol during a rampage that left 7 dead and 25 injured. On the morning of September 2nd, the shooter's body was delivered to the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office in an orange cadaver bag. Still in handcuffs, it was clad in the green pants, orange shirt, gray socks, and boots the shooter was wearing when law enforcement ended his August 31st killing spree with gunfire of their own. Before being fatally shot by police, the gunman left a trail of grief for the families of his victims, Layla Hernandez, age 15, Mary Granados, age 29, Joseph Griffith, age 40, Rodolfo Rudy Arco, age 57, Cameron Brown, age 30, Edwin Peregrino, age 25, and Raul Garcia, age 35. At 5 feet 9 inches and nearly 202 pounds, Seth Aaron Ator's body was described as that of a normally developed white male by the medical examiner. A toxicology screening showed no signs of alcohol, methamphetamine, cocaine, oxycodone, benzodiazepine, fentanyl, opiates, or marijuana. Multiple gunshot wounds were observed on the body from his shins to his scalp. Bullets perforated his knees, thighs, ribs, and neck, and the medical examiner documented lacerations and superficial abrasions. Internal injuries from police gunfire included damage to his lungs, liver, and bowels. One round fired into the gunman's left forearm traveled upward, fracturing his ulna, until the bullet exited the other side near the tattoo bearing the word ROCK and the symbol of a star, which was near the word Illuminati. There were 18 tattoos on Ator's body, according to the medical examiner's report. A lucky 13 appeared on his upper abdomen, a horseshoe was placed on his right arm, and a Star of David, marred by multiple shell fragments, appeared on his upper chest. On his right forearm was the word Odessa, a tattoo left unblemished by gunfire. While his head and face demonstrated traumatic injuries from bullet fragments, the medical examiner indicated his skull was not pierced by gunfire. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Permian Basin Area Foundation announced the opening of the 2020-2021 scholarship application cycle. Beginning January 1st, students and counselors were able to view eligibility and selection criteria for more than 80 scholarships through the application platform Academic Works. The application deadline is March 31st. Quote, "The foundation is looking forward to connecting Permian Basin students with local scholarship opportunities here at the foundation," said Sherry Heiding, scholarships administrator. Continuing the quote, applicants are required to complete only one online application, which will then place them on a pool of scholarships for which they may qualify. However, it will be very important to read all instructions because approximately one dozen scholarships are unique in their criteria with an outside application, a second essay, or a different deadline. End quote. At the 2019 scholarship dinner, Permian Basin Area Foundation announced more than $584,000 in scholarships to area students. The foundation anticipates awarding more than $500,000 for the 2020-2021 academic year. These awards are made possible by numerous donors to the foundation's scholarship funds in support of local talent pursuing higher education. Go online to learn more about scholarships, grants, and the philanthropic work of donors partnering with Permian Basin Area Foundation. Visit www.pbaf.org or call 617-3213. Student charged in Bonham incident. A 13-year-old boy at Bonham Middle School was charged Friday with a Class A misdemeanor threat of exhibition or use of a firearm. The boy told his class he would bring a gun to school and shoot up the campus, a news release said. Quote, our police believe it was a careless statement made during class and no one was in danger, a statement from Ector County ISD said. Continuing the quote, we want to ask all parents to have this discussion with their kids again. Statements like this, made in jest or out of frustration, will be taken seriously, disciplinary action will be taken, and criminal charges will be pressed. End quote. Woman charged with choking mother while intoxicated. A 37-year-old woman was arrested after she reportedly choked her mother while intoxicated. Bethany Walker was charged with assault by strangulation or suffocation, family violence, a third-degree felony, and public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported assault happened at 2:20 a.m. Sunday in the 3800 block of Wimberley Street, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. Officers were reportedly dispatched to a disturbance, and upon arrival, they found Walker outside the front of the residence in public. Walker was reportedly in an extreme state of intoxication with red, bloodshot eyes and had trouble standing. Walker had been fighting with her mother, identified as Marina George, the affidavit stated. During the fight, Walker reportedly impeded the normal breathing or circulation of the blood by applying pressure to the throat or neck of George. The injuries were consistent with statements made by George. Walker was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. She had two bonds totaling $20,000, and she posted bail on Tuesday, jail records show. This article is from the religion section of the Odessa American. Jesus' mystery years considered. Ministers believe he lived a quiet life in the Nazareth area. The story was written by Bob Campbell. The Bible is mostly silent on what Jesus Christ was doing between the ages of 12 and 30, but how he filled those years may be surmised with a fair degree of accuracy, ministers say. Discounting unsubstantiated stories that Jesus traveled to India and Great Britain as a young man, the clergymen believed he stayed in Nazareth in northern Israel and kept working there as a carpenter after his father Joseph died. Quote, the Gospels talk about either the carpenter or the carpenter's son, said the Reverend Steve Brooks, pastor of the First United Methodist Church of Midland. Quote, It seems clear that he was born in Bethlehem and was there until Herod tried to kill him when he was 2. The family stayed in Egypt, probably northern Egypt, for 2 to 5 years and moved to Nazareth. End quote. Brooks said Jesus lived in Nazareth, then a village of about 400 people, with his mother Mary, 4 brothers, and at least 2 sisters, till walking 20 miles northeast to Capernaum, on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, to start his ministry. Quote, "The blanks are not filled in for us, but I don't think the gospel writers thought it was pertinent," he said. "If we just work with what's there, that's what changes our lives." End quote. Crescent Park Baptist Church Pastor John Copeland thinks Jesus and Joseph made farm implements. Quote, "One story behind all this is that one day in the shop, Joseph cut the brace for a plow too short, and Jesus reached over and touched it and lengthened it for him," said the Reverend Copeland, who is moving to Tavares, Florida this month to train as a hospice chaplain. Quote, "They went around the Sea of Galilee working and were known in that area," end quote. Copeland said they likely worked on the Mammoth Roman Theater at Sepphoris, 4 miles north-northwest of Nazareth, and for area farmers in the fertile growing region. Quote, "The Valley of Armageddon is on the other side of the hill from Nazareth," he said. "That's where the final conflict on this earth will be as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords conquers the enemies of Israel," end quote. Asked his view of the Shroud of Turin, which some Christians consider Jesus' burial shroud, Copeland said he thinks it is legitimate because the image of Jesus' face and body was supernaturally imposed on the linen, not painted or stained, at the moment of his resurrection. The Reverend Michael Siss, Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of San Angelo, said Jesus, quote, "worshipped in the synagogue in Nazareth that is still in existence today. He was living as a young man, a good, practicing Jew, and working with his father," Bishop Siss said. Continuing the quote, "We assume that Joseph passed away before Jesus started his public ministry. Mary and Jesus would have been living in the same home, and he would have worked nearby. I don't know how far he ventured away from Nazareth, but he would have probably been working around the Sea of Galilee and would have periodically gone 65 miles south to the temple in Jerusalem for high holy days. An important trade route between Egypt and Syria passed through that area, and Jesus would have had interactions with people from many different cultures and nations. It may be that the Bible doesn't say much because he was just living a normal life." End quote. Redeemer Lutheran Church pastor Eric Stadler said Jesus, quote, "worked and served his family and was a good son until he started his public ministry." Some non-biblical sources have tried to expand on that period, but have not been found credible by Christian theologians, the Reverend Stadler said. Continuing the quote, "We know they were a poor family because Joseph and Mary had to make the simplest sacrifice when they dedicated Jesus in the temple. Most people think of carpentry as a nice trade, but he was probably more of a day laborer who did simple contract work. I think he followed his father around from job to job." Quote, "We know he had brothers and sisters, but we don't know how well they got along," he said. "He wasn't well received by them when he began his ministry. I personally wonder what it would have been like to have a brother like Jesus. Maybe they said, 'You never get in trouble, Jesus.'" He lived a simple, basic life. It's not mentioned for the most part because it is not pertinent to his teachings or ministry. What is told in the scriptures is what we need to know. End quote. Make Music in Your Heart. This was written by the Reverend Dr. Don Weeks, pastor, Connection Christian Church. Howard Thurman, author of Jesus and the Disinherited, wrote a poem I always think of this time of year. It keeps me company as I put away the Christmas decorations and look toward the year ahead. The poem reads in part, "When the song of the angels is stilled, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins, to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to bring peace among the people, to make music in the heart." If you're a Bible student, then you recognize most of the poem's words from Jesus' first sermon in Luke chapter 4. Jesus quotes from the 61st chapter of Isaiah as he prepares the congregation for his ministry, which will be about proclaiming good news to the poor and setting the oppressed at liberty. What is amazing about God coming to be present with us in Jesus Christ is not just that God came, but that God came by becoming poor. Did you know that in Texas, one out of every 7 households struggles to have enough food to eat? 22% of children in Texas are not regularly getting enough to eat. For Christians, caring for the poor is how we honor and love our Jesus, who came to us as a poor child. Whether it's bringing Meals on Wheels, volunteering at a homeless shelter, or supporting our food bank, we are serving the Christ child who came to offer salvation to all. Chris Stanley gets this. He's a UTPB art professor, but it seems his real job in this community is to make sure we are being attentive to our neighbors in need. 20 years ago, he started a very important tradition in our community that allows us to be about the work of Christmas all year long. Empty Bowls connects artists with feeding the hungry. Our food bank has scheduled its 20th annual Empty Bowls fundraiser from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. January 26 at the Odessa Marriott. Handmade pottery bowls will be $15 each, filled with all-you-can-eat soup. Come fill a bowl and feed someone in need. It's one more step toward being about what Jesus came for, to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to bring peace among the people. Surely, when we do that, we will also make music in our hearts. Here are some obituaries and death notices that appeared in the Odessa American on Saturday, January 11th. Monday, January 6th, Donald Richard Hart passed away at the age of 62. Don was born February 16th, 1957, in Youngstown, Ohio, to Donald and Jeanette Hart. Don is preceded in death by his mother, Jeanette Hart. Don is survived by his wife, Teresa Hart, children, Donald Hart III, Kayla McCarty and her husband, Donald McCarty, and their children, Evan and Taylor, and daughter, Jennifer Hart, father, Donald Hart, brother, Kevin, and sisters, Sherry and Debbie, and nephews and nieces. Funeral services will be held at 6 p.m. on Monday, January 13th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with Pastor Jimmy Braswell officiating. To send family condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Frankie Skinner, age 95, of Odessa, went on to glory on January 8th. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Saturday, January 11th, at Sunset Funeral Home with Pastor Jackie Brim of Second Baptist Church officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Frankie was born in Glendale, California, to Orion Bigham and Nola Stanbro Bigham. Frankie is preceded in death by her husband of 53 years, Robert Skinner, her parents, and sister Pat Yarbrough. Frankie is survived by daughters Patty Ziegler of Midland, Marcia Busby of Greenville, Illinois, Karen Smith of Denton, Texas, 8 grandchildren, 8 great-grandchildren, 1 niece, 1 nephew, and 1 cousin. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Memorial contributions can be made to Second Baptist Church, a portion of which will go to the Prayer Garden Fund. Kevin Dwayne Corsi, age 54, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 8th, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Harkey Funeral Home of Monahans. Floetta Stafford, age 87, died Friday, January 10th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Virginia Inez McPhail Jameson, age 93, of Snyder, died Wednesday, January 8th, in Snyder. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m., January 12th, at Calvary Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Hillside Memorial Gardens. Reverend Matt Lowry is officiating. Arrangements are by Bell Cypress Seal Funeral Home of Snyder. Jimmy D. Shipman, age 82, of Crane, died Thursday, January 9th, in Crane. Memorial service will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Monday, January 13th, at First Baptist Church of Crane. Pastor David Evans is officiating. Arrangements are by Schaefer Nichols Funeral Home of Crane. Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the local and state section of the Odessa American for Sunday, January 12th. Teachers from India find satisfaction at Permian. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. To help fill its more than 300 teacher job openings, Ector County ISD is looking internationally. Assistant Superintendent for Human Resources, Gregory Nelson, said the district has recruited teachers from Spain for many years and is looking in Mexico, Jamaica, the Philippines, Canada, and India, among other locations. Two of the teachers from India, Usharani Malavarapu and Santi Madhapati, are at Permian High School. Malavarapu arrived in August when school opened. She is from the state of Andhra Pradesh in South India. Initially, Malavarapu said she saw an advertisement on the ECISD website about recruiting teachers. She thought it would be a good cultural exchange for her, where she could learn from the culture here, understand the educational methods, and take that experience back to India with her. Malavarapu said she also wanted to impart some of her culture to the students in Odessa. She will be here for 3 years, and if everything goes well, another 2. She has been teaching physics for 17 years, but she also has been a teacher trainer. Quote, "The subject that I teach should be given as per the understanding and the learning style of the student. Each student learns in their own style, so my preparation of the lessons should be to meet the needs of each child's learning style," Malavarapu said. "Back in India, I taught in a college, so there was a huge classroom. Here, when I see 30 kids, 35 kids, it's a smaller classroom. The physical setup is also encouraging me to implement certain learning styles." End quote. She observed that the school district here takes care of the schools, and the government in India doesn't care for them as much, hence the rise of private schools. Students study a bit more in depth in India than here. Mandapati, who has taught for 10 years at the university level, is teaching English at PHS. She is from Hyderabad, India. She said being here is a dream for her, and she is very interested in developing the students in every aspect. Mandapati said this is one of the best opportunities of her life. The educational system in India, compared to Texas, is different. She said she creates activities to meet the needs of different kinds of students. Quote, "It has changed my educational style a lot. My perspective has changed a lot," Mandapati said. Since she's been in Odessa, she's learned about do-now activities to keep students engaged. Quote, "After that, I keep going. I've discovered many activities to keep them engaged, to make them learn, and they keep changing all the time throughout the day," Mandapati said. "This is the best part of my learning for me," end quote. Also, coming from India to West Texas has broadened her outlook to deal with problems of some of the students, as well as getting educational material that is going to help students in India. She noted that the experience she has had here will benefit her when she returns to India. Quote, "I don't know much about it, but I love the place," Mandapati said of Odessa. "I love the people here and students. I tell them every day I love all the kids here. That's the main thing that makes me speak with the parents also. I call them, I tell them about the well-being of the kids. I do it in India. Maybe at first glance I felt like there was no need to call the parents unless or until there is any problem. But I made additional calls to give updates about the kids. The mothers are very happy about that. They appreciate it," end quote. She said a lot of patience is needed to deal with the students. Quote, "And you need to be very creative. The kids are good. They are smart. But the only thing we have to do is find a way to put them in the class, how to keep them engaged and interested in learning. Once we bring them to the task of learning, they are quite good. They are smart. You just have to bring them to the part of the learning. That's the toughest thing. The way that we guide them through the activities has to be very right. They deviate you, but you have to work on a different way," Mandapati said. Nelson said around 2014-2015, there were just 3 teachers from India. But in 2018-2019, he was approached about the opportunity to consider increasing that number. His department worked to secure a recruiter who had offices in India, and they did a lot of ground-level recruiting in India. A new J-1 visa provider was also contracted who was experienced in more international recruiting, which made for a better relationship with our recruiter and the J-1 sponsor. Quote, "And again, we fixed some things in-house to provide better upfront practices, including our screening of those candidates, principal screening of those candidates, and then process once they're selected, and more support once stateside," Nelson said. Nelson said the first group recruited had about 37 teachers, but they wound up getting about 25 to the states. Quote, "We're identifying all certification barriers and making sure that those barriers no longer exist before the principals interview them, and that's going to help. It hasn't borne fruit yet, but I think it will. We're more focused on certification and eligibility to come to the States. Then, once they clear that hurdle, then they will be interviewed by a team in India with the contractor that we work with. Once they're interviewed by the team in India, then they will also be interviewed by the J-1 sponsor for the permission to travel to make sure those requirements are all in place. Once we get a green light that all those things were successful, that particular candidate will be able to be interviewed by principals, Nelson said. Quote, we kind of do that in a teaming aspect. We're going to try to get someone on the ground to facilitate those interviews this year instead of it all being by Skype. But even if it is all by Skype, someone will be in the room with the candidates while our principals interview them. Then we record those interviews, so if a principal happens to not be able to make it to that interview, they're recorded so they can go back and watch it. They can then make contact with that candidate on their own in order to make an offer, so those are some of the changes we've made, Nelson said. 30 is the number of teachers ECISD is shooting for, but that had not been finalized. He said that would have been done in December for future recruitment. ECISD also is expanding its reach into the Philippines and Jamaica, where a small pool of candidates has been identified. Some countries have specific rules in place on recruiting and how long a teacher can stay. Quote, other international recruitment sometimes is not as specific and doesn't require the country's intervention, but we've identified a special recruiting platform for the Philippines, Spain, India, and with Mexico it's similar, but that's not the federal government. In Mexico, primarily it's the universities, so we've developed a relationship with the major universities in Mexico so we can make sure we cross all the T's and dot all the I's as it relates to recruiting people from Mexico to come to the United States on a J-1 or H-1B visa, Nelson said. Teachers are not limited by grade level, but it depends on their background and qualifications. Quote, we always try to make sure that the candidate that is being recruited and would come and teach something that is in their wheelhouse, something that they're experienced with, something they're comfortable with, and something our kids can benefit from, Nelson said. That has resulted in more secondary placements for teachers from India, but teachers from Spain tend to be placed teaching bilingual education at the elementary level. Permian principal Danny Gex said things have gone well so far. There are 5 or 6 teachers from India on staff. Quote, they are very appreciative and grateful for the chance to come here to America and teach. They are very hard workers as they don't take anything for granted, Gex said in a text message.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, January 12th, 2020, Section A. Concert to aid mass shooting victims. Clay Walker, scheduled to perform at La Hacienda, by Nathaniel Miller. Dan Henderson said the decision among members of the oil and gas community to start putting together an event to benefit those affected by the Labor Day weekend shooting happened almost instantly. A few days after August 31st, Henderson said he and others started reaching out to local leaders with the hopes of putting together a fundraiser. Gunman Seth Ader killed 7 people and injured 25 others during a random shooting spree August 31st. Ader drove around mostly Odessa and Interstate 20, shooting randomly at people. The spree ended that day at Synergy Theater when Ader was shot to death by law enforcement. Members of the oil and gas industry consider each other family, Henderson said, adding, it was logical to do something to try to help out. After months of planning, Basin Strong will host a black tie and boots benefit dinner and a concert by country superstar Clay Walker. Henderson said the response to the event has been more than he anticipated. "It's very humbling," Henderson, the chairperson for the event, said. On January 16th, Walker is scheduled to perform at La Hacienda Event Center along with Rick Trevino for the Hope and Healing Community Concert. Tickets are on sale through the Basin Strong website and are $20 for general admission. A second ticket option costs $100 and includes a three-course meal before the show. They, concertgoers, do get a dinner provided by the Chuckwagon Gang and the concert ticket as well, Leah Williams with LC Public Relations said. A boots and black tie benefit dinner has also been scheduled at 5 p.m. at the Odessa Marriott and Convention Center. The benefit dinner will be emceed by CBS 7's Jay Hendricks and Shelby Landgraf and will include a cocktail hour, live and silent auctions, dinner, and tickets to the concert. Sponsorships are available for purchase and start at $2,500. Henderson said while the event calls for black ties and boots, it's a more come-as-you-are type of event. It's Texas style, he said. After the event, attendees will be bused to La Hacienda for the concert. Henderson said proceeds from the concert will go towards the Odessa Community Foundation's August 31st fund, as well as net proceeds from the banquet. The fundraiser was founded to help benefit the victims and their families after a gunman killed 7 people and wounded 25 others during Labor Day weekend before being killed by law enforcement along I-20. Henderson said the event is for everyone and encouraged all to attend in some way to help show their support for the Odessa Midland community. He added numerous people have reached out to try and help however they could. People want to help, he said. If you go. What? Black tie and boots benefit dinner. When? 5 p.m. January 16th. Where? Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th. Cost? Sponsorship levels at $50,000, $25,000, $10,000, $5,000, and $2,500. Sponsorship levels include a cocktail hour, silent and live auction, tables, and tickets to see Clay Walker. Concert. What? Clay Walker with Rick Trevino. When? Doors open at 5:30 p.m. January 16th. Where? La Hacienda Event Center, 12600 State Highway 191 in Midland. Cost? General admission tickets are $20. Tickets and a private three-course dinner by the Chuckwagon Gang can be purchased for $100. Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, expanding with start of spring classes, by Sam Waller. The Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, PBALC, is expanding its reach with the start of its spring class session. In addition to its main location in Midland, the PBALC is offering classes at satellite locations in Odessa and Big Spring. While classes have already started at the satellite locations, registration for classes at those sites is still ongoing, according to Andrea DeJong, the PBALC's development and outreach coordinator. As our organization is new to Odessa and Big Spring, we are still working to raise awareness for our services and grow class attendance, DeJong said. At this time, we will be allowing new students to enroll after the classes start, and will continue enrolling throughout the session until classes reach capacity. Students are required to pay a yearly enrollment fee of $25. Meanwhile, DeJong said, registration for the Midland location will run through Monday, the first day of classes there. The Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center is a nonprofit organization dedicated to adult literacy. Instruction is designed for adults over the age of 18 who need to develop their literacy, English language, or computer skills. The mission of PBALC is to develop the literacy skills of adults so they can achieve their goals, improve their lives, and impact our community, DeJong said. Our vision is that all adults would be able to accomplish their learning goals, regardless of language or literacy barriers. And the addition of satellite locations isn't the only new thing PBALC is implementing, she said. In our spring 2020 session, we are excited to be introducing Voxy curriculum to our students. This is a very interactive and engaging online English language learning program that our students will be able to access at home through their smartphones and computers, as well as in the classroom. At the Midland facility, located at 1709 West Wall, instruction is offered in English language learning, adult education and literacy, and digital literacy classes. Instructors work with students to develop their reading and writing, English language, and basic computer skills in a small group class setting. Classes in Midland will be held Monday through Thursday through April 23rd. In Odessa, English language learning classes are being held from 6:30 to 8 p.m. each Wednesday through April 29th at Odessa Bible Church, 3901 Pembroke. Children in kindergarten through fifth grade may attend free Bible classes provided by Odessa Bible Church if child care is needed. Child care is not provided by or affiliated with the Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center. Classes in Big Spring are being held from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Tuesdays at Howard College's Anthony Hunt Library, 1001 Birdwell Lane, through May 5th. Both English language learning and digital literacy classes are available in Big Spring. Each of our locations will be offering different services, DeJong said. Our main location in Midland provides all three services, adult education and literacy, English language learning, and computer literacy. Our satellite locations are offered through partnerships with other organizations. In the future, we hope to increase our offerings in Odessa and Big Spring, but this will depend on the availability of suitable class locations with the necessary equipment and volunteers. And volunteers, DeJong said, are the backbone of the program. Our organization is always looking for individuals interested in volunteering with us. We use volunteer instructors to teach many of the classes we offer. Our volunteer instructors are not required to have any prior teaching experience and are provided with special training in adult education. We are also in need of volunteers for special events as well as for short-term projects. We are an independent organization funded from grants, donations, and various fundraising efforts. Our greatest needs are funding and volunteers. For more information about enrolling in classes, contact Hunter Smith, PBALC's Coordinator of Students and Volunteers, by email at hsmith@pbalc.org or by phone at 432-682-9693, extension 402. Prospective students may also apply online at tinyurl.com/y3hhjka3. Quick hits. Body found. Few details were available about a dead man found Saturday morning in the 1800 block of 49th Street. Odessa police responded to the 1800 block of East 49th Street for a welfare check and found a deceased male inside the residence. The OPD Criminal Investigation Division, Crime Scene Unit, and Ector County Medical Examiner's Office all responded to the scene. Super Bowl of Caring. Albertsons Market, Market Street, and United Supermarkets locations across West Texas have scheduled the annual Super Bowl of Caring, with donations benefiting the West Texas Food Bank through February 2nd. Locations include Market Street, 4950 East 42nd, Albertsons Market Stores, 2751 County Road West, and 1350 East 8th, all in Odessa. Market Street, 4706 North Midkiff, Albertson's Market Stores, 1002 Andrews Highway, and 3317 North Midland Drive, all in Midland. United Supermarkets, 11 Southeast 2nd Street, Seminole, and United Supermarket, 2302 Lubbock Highway, Lubbock. Guests will have the opportunity to purchase a $10 prepackaged bag filled with non-perishable items, including peanut butter, macaroni and cheese, canned corn, and dried beans. These donations will contribute to the more than 64,000 meals the West Texas Food Bank provides annually. On the net, unitedtexas.com. Local News Roundup. Blessing Meal. Highland United Methodist Church, 1808 North Dixie Boulevard, and volunteers offer a backdoor blessing meal at 6 p.m. Wednesdays in the Fellowship Hall. There is no charge. Any donations contributed go toward Highland's Children's Ministries. For more information, call 332-0261 or email highlandumc.odessa@gmail.com. Candidate Forums. The Ector County Republican Party has scheduled two nights of citizen candidate forums for all 10 Ector County candidates for Congressional District 11 at 5:30 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at Odessa College, Salisbury Building, 201 West University. All voting citizens are encouraged to attend and hear your candidates. For more information, call 559-7066. Rig count dives as oil prices drop. The rig count in the Permian Basin was down 6 this week. The latest count Friday by Baker Hughes shows, with 397 rigs active in the region. A year ago, 488 rigs were active in the region. Nationally, the oil and gas rig is down 15 from last week at 781 rigs. A year ago, 1,075 rigs were active. The count shows that 659 rigs sought oil, down 11 from the previous week, and 119 explored for natural gas, down 4 from the previous week. The U.S. rig count peaked at 4,530 in 1981. It bottomed out in May of 2016 at 404. The regional benchmark Plains West Texas Intermediate posting ended Friday at $55.50 per barrel, down $4 from last Friday's close. National benchmark West Texas Intermediate crude ended at $59.04 per barrel, down $4.01 from the previous week. Letter to the editor. Impeachment is a sham. In December of 1998, Nancy Pelosi said, pertaining to Bill Clinton's impeachment proceedings, that the impeachment was a punishment searching for a crime that does not exist and was happening because the Republicans in the House are paralyzed with hatred of President Clinton. Then she said, stop this hypocrisy. Stop this hatred. Vote no on all four counts. Now, remember the fact that Bill Clinton actually committed a crime. He lied to a federal grand jury while under oath, which is perjury, and perjury is a high crime or misdemeanor. The Democrats tried to portray Clinton's impeachment trial as a witch hunt into his private sex life, but it was not about that. It was about the fact that he lied to a federal grand jury while under oath, about his affair with Monica Lewinsky. Contrast that with President Trump's sham impeachment trial, wherein the Democrats came up with no evidence of anything even approaching treason or high crimes and misdemeanors. They are trying to make the case that he abused the power of his office. They also are trying to make a crime of his obstruction of Congress. Neither of these charges are even a crime, let alone at the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. I believe that this obstruction is their main complaint, because he hurt their feelings, because he won't help them prosecute him. That also is no crime. It is just butthurt. And since Pelosi mentioned hypocrisy, at which she is an expert, just look at their impeachment hearing process. The Democrats would not allow the Republicans to call any witnesses. The Republicans were only allowed to ask the Democrats' witnesses questions which were approved by Democrats. And there was absolutely no firsthand information about the allegedly incriminating phone call. In other words, President Trump was denied his constitutional rights to a fair trial and the right to confront his accusers, and all the evidence was hearsay. And now Pelosi is refusing to send the articles of impeachment to the Senate until a fair trial in the Senate can be guaranteed. And yet she rammed it through the House Judiciary Committee because it was urgently needed to protect the Constitution. Wow. What about that hypocrisy? As I've mentioned many times before, if you looked up the word hypocrisy in a dictionary, you would find a picture of a Democrat. Probably Pelosi herself. In another example of hypocrisy, Pelosi charges that President Trump abused the power of his office by asking the Ukrainian president to give him dirt on Joe Biden to use against Biden in the presidential campaign. In the first place, he asked Ukrainian President Zelensky to investigate corruption related to the Ukraine's former president and Biden, which was a legitimate concern, seeing as how Biden openly bragged in a videotaped interview about getting a Ukrainian prosecutor fired for investigating Biden's son and the Ukrainian oil and gas company he worked for. In the second place, even if he was looking for information to use against Biden, how is that any different from Hillabeast Clinton seeking information from a discredited British spy to use against Trump in the 2016 election? All candidates for all offices do that. It is called opposition research. At least that is what it is called when Democrats do it. When Republicans do it, it is called abuse of power. Wow, there's that hypocrisy again. As an aside, Hunter Biden was given a seat on the board of the Burisma oil and gas company for a salary of $50,000 per month or $80,000 per month. Both figures have been quoted. That's a pretty hefty compensation package for someone who had no experience in the oil and gas industry and did not speak Ukrainian. I have some experience in oil and gas, as I worked for an oil brokerage firm for 28 years. And I also do not speak Ukrainian, so I am even more eminently qualified for a seat on their board than Hunter Biden was. I wonder if they have any more openings. Does anyone with even a semblance of intelligence really believe that being Joe Biden's son did not have anything to do with Hunter having that position? Anybody believing that, please call me. I have a bridge in California that I am trying to sell. I'll make you a good deal on it. To repeat myself, Trump's impeachment is a sham, but what could you expect from the Democrats who have still not gotten over the fact that their candidate lost? That is their real reason for trying to impeach a president who is supported by half the voters and won a vast majority of the electoral votes and is perfect evidence of paralyzed by hatred of the president. For 3 years, they have done nothing but try to remove President Trump from office. They have not done one single thing for America. Thanks, Sandy Milner, Odessa.
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. You can also hear this program anytime online at recordinglibrary.org or by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.